Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, good morning. We are back with another edition of Leading Edge Medicine on this gorgeous day. Did you enjoy that sunshine yesterday? Wow.
Yes, yep. Dr. Mixon yep. was walking around.
Oh, there we go. Let's turn some microphones on. How about that?
Would you like that? Microphones would be nice.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Now I can hear myself.
It was just Dr. Mixon and I yesterday or last week. So
that's right.
I turned your mics.
Well, I tried to come, but you know, you can't if you don't have any voice in your voice box and your
voice,
your chest is congested, and your husband gives you an N95 mask to go to work. You go, well, what am I going to do on radio?
So she showed up yesterday, or she showed up last Saturday for work. And I said, no. Go home.
Go home. There we go.
I'm still the old school, you know, show up for work no matter what.
Yes.
Even on your dying bed, deathbed.
But she's much better today.
Yes.
I'm alive.
Very good. And it is officially summer.
It is indeed.
Yes, it is indeed.
Now the days start getting shorter.
That's right. We had our longest day.
That's right.
Yes.
Yesterday.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And actually, my heart sinks when I hear that.
I know. The days are starting to get shorter.
Yeah.
But, as, you know, I judge mine by, is it light at 6? Mm. Because when I go out and hit the trail at 6 in the morning, if I don't need a headlamp to see,
right?
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
fine.
It's good.
Yes. But when the days get short enough that at 6 a.m. I have to wear a headlamp to see the ground, I'm not so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. So what keeps you motivated to go even on those dark, dreary days?
Bending.
There you go.
The whip.
The white.
No, it's not the whip. It's the lure. The lure of the sex goddess wife. That's what it is. You know, she is so proud. Right now, she's, what, 48 or 49 years old?
Okay.
And she has her 23-inch teenage waist back.
Okay.
I remember those.
Yes.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't think I ever had one.
she's quite proud of the fact that she's back to the same size she was when she was a teenager.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I can wear the same earrings as I did when I was in high school. So,
you know,
there's that.
I have said many times that I attribute your good health to her. I think that she has been instrumental in getting you where you are today.
She is. Absolutely is.
Yeah, and the fact that she locks him outside first thing in the morning, said, don't come back till you run 3 miles on the trail, and has nothing to do with it, right, Dr. Mixon?
That's right. No, here's a picture she took of herself yesterday at the gym in the mirror.
OMG.
Take a look at that figure.
Wow.
You know, she's very proud of the fact that she looks good in a $25 or $30 knit dress.
Yeah.
Well, no one's looking at the dress.
Yeah, I've told her 1,000 times. Anybody's $30 dress will look good.
Yes.
If it's covering $1 million
body. So true.
Yeah.
So true.
Oh.
So, yeah. Being 30 years her senior, you know, and she looks like that.
Yeah.
I gotta keep up.
Okay.
Well, yeah, good
at least
for you, Joe.
Gotta do my best to keep up.
Yeah. Anyway.
You gotta be motivated. You
That's
have
right.
to have a
That's
motivator.
Right. She is his motivation.
She is definitely my motivation.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, so shall we do the medical,
yes,
political news today.
Yes, Dr. Mixon. Oh, he's
politics,
ready.
The politics are, the politicians are now involved in medicine again.
Wow.
You know, if the politicians were sick to politics, I'd leave them alone.
Yes, yes.
You know. But when they insist on getting involved in medicine, well, then I've got something to say, because I happen to know something about medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is a young surgeon in Texas, Ethan Heim, I think his name is. And young Dr. Heim just finished a residency at Texas Children's Hospital, which is a first-rate hospital. He's he trained to be a pediatric surgeon, so, you know, he did undergrad, did his medical school for 4 years, now did his internship, and now he's done a 5-year pediatric residency. So he's put a lot of time and effort into this. Texas, a while back, several months back, passed a law making it illegal to do gender surgeries on minors, on children. You know, if you're a grown-up and you want to cut off your penis and testicles, that's okay. It's, you know, your body. If you can find a surgeon with no conscience and no ethics who's willing to do it, you can, you know, get it done. But for children who are unable to give informed consent, they are children. Their judgment has not yet been developed. So Texas passed a law saying, no, you can't do this to kids. And Dr. Heim apparently became aware that even though the hospital had said they had stopped doing the gender surgeries on children, that they were still doing them quietly and breaking the law.
Wow.
So he wanted to be a whistleblower and say, you know, Children's Hospital of Texas is not obeying the law. Fine. That would have been fine. And that's what he's saying. I'm being prosecuted. He's being charged with 4 felonies. Apparently 4 heavily armed federal agents showed up at his door the other morning.
Wait a minute. He's being charged.
Yes.
Wow.
And with 4 felonies, it can give him 10 years in prison for each of them.
What did he do?
Well, he is saying, and that's why I'm going to shine a little more light on this, he's saying, I'm being attacked because I am whistleblowing something the administration doesn't want whistleblown.
Okay? Whistleblowers are not traditionally put in jail in the United States.
No, they're not. In fact, they're protected.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out, as I've looked at this more carefully, there is fault on both sides. First of all, those federal agents should have been showing up at the door of the administrators of the hospital saying, you know, but see, this is a state law, not a federal law.
Okay.
So, you know, should have been state police showing up with the administrators. The reason that they're there, though, is HIPAA.
Hmm.
Young Dr. Heim, it would appear, did not gather the evidence while he was employed as a surgeon there and had legal access to the medical records. What seems to have happened is he thought about it. He realized he needed evidence, but he didn't realize the evidence need was present until after he had finished his residency at the 1st of June. So he went back and hacked his way into, by spoofing somebody's password, got back into the hospital's medical records, found the surgical records, found the surgical schedule, was able to identify the kids that had been operated on illegally, and kept that evidence. So what he did wrong, I mean, what he did right, ethically right, was, yes, blow the whistle on people that are breaking the law and damaging children for the rest of their lives. That part was good. What he did wrong was hacking into people's medical records that he no longer had a legal right to access and making a record of their what had been done to them as part of their medical care.
In order to show that they were doing something illegal.
In order to show that these children were being preyed upon by unethical surgeons that were breaking the law. So, so because his heart was pure and his intentions were honorable, he used a dishonest and illegal method to get there.
And our government doesn't, they don't do that.
Oh,
they don't put up with any of that, especially the hacking.
Yeah. So, wow. You know, so yes. So, you know, as I look at this, I'm saying, okay, A, Children's Hospital of Texas was wrong. They broke the law. I wish we had such a law here in Washington State, because here children can be mutilated, you know, even against their parents' wishes.
Wow.
If their school teachers and their doctors feel they need to be mutilated, they can be mutilated, but the parents don't get a say in Washington State. In Texas, at least, you can't do this to kids, even if the parents want them mutilated.
Wow.
But you don't hack into people's medical records without authorization.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah.
Okay.
So there's, you know, doing what your heart tells you to do, doing what you think is the ethical thing to do, but using dishonesty and illegal methods to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mix.
It's a mix. I wonder what his other option would have been.
Well, his other option would have been to recognize this prior to leaving.
Okay.
When he had legal access to the records.
To be able to do that.
And then he, you know, could have documented that these surgeries were done on, you know, these kids, and then under seal gone to a court and said,
okay,
you know, we want to make a record that have the records sealed so they don't get public access so no one else can get it, but let the courts have it.
Or if somebody else would now corroborate his story,
yes,
and who has access and say, well, yes, he's right.
Yeah. Well, it turns out the state of Texas, the Attorney General of Texas, has now launched a formal investigation of the hospital, and they will be subpoenaing all of the surgical records.
Physicians,
and
yeah.
So it'll
right,
be,
right.
You know.
And they wouldn't have had this information had
he,
yeah.
Not, yeah, had he not done it. So.
Wow, that's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm, okay.
So, you know, everybody can be right and
everybody can be wrong
at the same time.
You might need to add that to your list of Dr. Mixon's rules.
No, Dr. Mixon's rules are
political
simple.
Rules.
Dr. Mixon is right and the rest of you don't know what you're doing.
That's oh, boy.
The world according to Dr.
Yes.
Mixon.
Yes. Oh, believe it or not, you're listening to Leading Edge Medicine.
They don't believe it.
They don't believe it. We are all here in the studio. I'm Lynette. Dr. Jerry Mixon here. Dr. Samira Umat back. We're so glad. And we are ready and willing to answer your questions. 1-800-465-8770. And get in quick and be one of the first ones, not one of the last ones, because we're not able to get everybody when they call at the last minute. But right now is a great time to call to get your question answered with the doctors. 1-800-465-8770.
Before we do that, Lynette, how about we say happy birthday to you?
Yes, this is my birthday.
Happy
birthday to you.
Right.
Yes. Starting the day with my some of my favorite folks here. So very,
well,
very glad to be
in.
Here.
Yeah.
Yes, my best girlfriend of almost 40 years is hijacking me after the show. 12:01, she told me. As soon as you're off the air, she'll be there and whisking me away for a weekend.
Oh, how
we're
nice.
We're going to do an overnighter and catch up. And yeah, I love
Wonderful.
It.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So that's the plan. You can call and sing happy birthday to me. I'd be fine with that. 1-800-465-8770. We can play Guess the Age of the Host. How about that? Somebody says 14.
I'll give
14.
You a hint. She's legal.
Yeah. There we go. Okay, I'm over 21. 1-800-465-8770 to call in.
You were thinking legal to drink. I was thinking the age of sexual consent.
Oh, boy. Look at the time. We should probably go to a break right now. 1-800. And that's my job. 1-800-465-8770. We would love to talk to you about your health as you're aging, as I'm aging. A new number for me. We all are. What can we do to be the best that we can possibly be as we move through all of this? We're not going to age gracefully, right, Dr. Mixon?
No such thing.
No. No, but we can be our best and we can age and be stronger.
Faster.
Leaner.
Smarter.
Sexier.
See, I knew you'd get that one.
I got that one.
Happier.
Happier. And that's what we do here on the show. If you've dealt with some symptoms, maybe a new diagnosis for you or a loved one, talk to us. Give us a call. See what we can do to help you out. Answer some questions. 1-800-465-8770. We'll be back with Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again.
By the way, this is a picture of a guy
going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again.
Dr. Mixon, you've got, yeah, that's good information to have.
Yeah.
Leading Edge Medicine here with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. UMAT, and that was a picture there of a...
Yeah, well, this was something my wife put on WeChat early this morning. Apparently, yesterday on the Cross Kirkland Corridor Trail, which I run every morning, my wife and I walk on, our daughter goes out and walks on it with her friends. Some guy was out on the trail, bald, dark brown beard, green sweater, denim jeans, somewhere in his 30s, male, Caucasian, small to medium build, was apparently accosting children and offering them drugs.
Wow.
On the trail.
Wow.
So the kids ran home and talked to their parents. The parents got on the car and went looking for this guy, thank heavens for them.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they found him and took his picture, and that's why here on my phone is the picture.
You have a great picture there.
My wife posted this picture on WeChat, so all the Chinese moms and dads know
who that is to
look for. We all are now looking for this guy. Mm. And, you know, he's apparently posing for the picture as he can't take his picture. And you know, my response to this is, okay, it was fine that the parents took his picture. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they kick the...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would
if he had done this to my daughter, he'd be in the hospital.
Yes.
I'd have broken both arms, both legs, and disfigured him for life.
I would have kicked him.
But then, what can I tell you? I'm a bit of a savage when it comes to protecting my family. Mm. So,
as we should be.
But anyway, the police now have his picture.
Good.
And so.
Good. Make about 100 copies, put them all up and down the trail.
Yeah, well, you know, every Chinese and I think on the planet uses WeChat. So.
Ah, okay.
So,
yeah.
But so all the Chinese parents in the area now know what this guy looks like. But the Caucasian parents should know it.
Yes,
too.
They
and
should.
So should the Indian parents and Hispanic parents.
Yeah.
I mean, there should be a way to post, you know, child predator pictures so that we'd all see them.
Yes. And, you know, when we go video and stream, we could show that picture.
That's true.
We'll be able to show you the picture of Bandine working out. And right. Dr. Mixon in his shorts today. And
okay.
No, he will dress up for TV.
That's right.
Maybe.
Well, we'll see, yes.
Actually, yeah, maybe. Who
there
knows?
You go. Yes.
It depends. You know, the days that we do line dancing, I'll bring my Stetson and boots.
Okay, we might have a theme, yeah.
That's true.
Know.
We might have a theme each
never
time
know.
For, yeah. for Leading Edge Medicine.
Yeah, we are not going to be a boring podcast, that's for sure.
We are not boring. Why would our podcast be boring?
You got it.
Yes, 1-800-465-8770. Okay, Dr. Mixon, I do have a question for you.
All right.
Read this article and I thought, how true is this? That eating cheese can help you live longer. Apparently, there was a study in over 20 countries, 120,000 people from the ages of 30 to 70, and they found that it lowered their risks by 25% for strokes and cardiovascular by eating more cheese.
And it's the fermented products.
Okay.
Okay, it's the fermentation process.
So this is real? I'm asking Dr. Mixon about this.
Yeah.
Dr. UMAT.
That's right. You know, fermented foods of all sorts. So, you know, fresh yogurt, cheese, You know, kimchi,
sauerkraut.
Now let's go back to the cheese because I like that one.
She's stuck on the cheese.
Yeah, I'm not going to be putting more sauerkraut on my. Although I do like sauerkraut.
Well, saturated fats are not going to extend lifespan. We all know
that. Yes. But cheese fermented.
But the fermented products appear to be, you know, very healthy for us.
Okay. Yes. So.
They help the gut microbiome as well. And the microbiome is very important because it protects us from invasion from other organisms that may be harmful and dangerous to us.
Okay. It's not just that. And you know, we had a caller a week or two ago mm-hmm. who was upset about, you know, the messenger RNA being in the vaccines and stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think what most people have missed track of is that messenger RNA is the way cells communicate with other cells. Mm-hmm. And every cell in your body is kicking out exosomes and acellular vesicles that contain messenger RNA. And those go through your circulation and they're picked up by every other cell in your body. So every cell in your body is communicating with every other cell. And messenger RNA is the way cells communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. They send out these little messengers and other cells pull them in and utilize this RNA into making their DNA. And so we're always modifying our genome slightly in our epigenetics. And it turns out that the bacteria in our gut, and there are more bacteria in your bowel than you have cells in the rest of your body. So
wow.
There's actually more of us as bacteria than there are of eukaryotic cells.
Oh, what a picture.
And all of those bacteria that fill our gut are dumping out messenger RNA, which we then absorb through the bowel, gets into our bloodstream, and is reprogramming the cells in the rest of our body, including our brains, our hearts, our lungs, our livers, our kidneys, etc. So we are actually in a symbiotic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We are sending messages from our bodies to the bowel bacteria, and the bowel bacteria are sending messages to the rest of us that we think of as us, although it turns out that from a genetic standpoint, we are actually a mix of what's in our gut and what's in our muscles, ligaments, tendons, brain, etc. And so messenger RNA is critical to the function of every mammal, avian, and you know, lizard on the planet. We are all now symbiotic with our guts, which is really kind of interesting. And so, yes, your body influences the makeup of which bacteria are thriving and which are being damaged in your gut. And the bacteria in your gut are symbiotic by sending messages to the rest of your body for health and or disease.
That's right. Okay. And that's affected by what we eat, what we take in.
And how we live.
Yeah.
It turns out that if you are overweight,
mm-hmm.
that pro-inflammatory milieu is actually altering the bacteria in your gut because you are sending out inflammatory messenger RNA from your fat, because fat is a very active protein manufacturing plant. Fat is pro-inflammation. It increases inflammation. And those inflammatory markers are going into your bowel and altering the bacteria. And so you get different bacteria for lean people and heavy people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
People with heart disease have one set of bacteria. People without heart disease have different. People with dementia, people with depression, people that are chronically fatigued, people who are diabetics. They're always sending different disease signals to the bowel, and the bowel is changing which bacteria grow in response to that. And then those different bacteria are sending messages back to the rest of us to alter the way we function.
Right. I mean, that's the essence of, you know, how epigenetics is impacting our health today and how we are not necessarily the genetic code we inherit.
No.
But we can modify expression of the genome that we have inherited. And therein lies a lot of what we do to help people become better as they get older mm-hmm. is modify. Some people may think, well, you know, she's just telling me to exercise, or they just tell me to exercise. Well, I can do that on my own. But it's not just that. It is understanding what that exercise mechanism will do, not just for their muscles and for the relationship between fat and muscle and brain-derived neurotropic factors, but then how do you use that to become healthier?
Mm-hmm. Well, and exercise versus fat, you can actually look at this as a dichotomy.
Yeah.
Fat produces more than 80 different destructive peptides and enzymes that raise our risk of dementia, heart attacks, strokes, diabetes, degenerative joint disease, chronic back pain, yada, yada. It goes on and on and on. Working muscle is equally active, and it's producing what we refer to as myokines. And we're always finding more and more myokines. Back 20-some years ago, I used to say working muscle produces more than 100 different productive myokines. Mm. Then it went up to as high as 300.
Mm-hmm.
And a week ago, I saw a new paper. And they're now saying working muscle produces more than 600 proteins that it's dumping into your bloodstream to alter the way your body functions.
Right.
Okay. So we've got two compartments in our body. We've got the lean compartment, the muscular compartment, versus the fat, the obesity compartment. And the fat is producing depression, fatigue, right, dementia, mm-hmm, diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, chronic fatigue, increased pain and inflammation, joint degeneration. Whereas working muscle is producing new brain cells, neurologic factors, you know, brain-derived neurotrophic factors, but it's producing anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, anti-heart attacks, anti-stroke.
Right.
It's helping you rebuild your joints. So really, we've got two parts of our body that are in conflict.
Right.
And the more working muscle you've got, the healthier you tend to be, and the more fat you've got, the less healthy you tend to be.
Right.
And so the trick is you want to shift that balance towards muscle and away from fat.
Right.
And get as lean as you reasonably can. Mm.
That's right. And then there's one other thing related to that in kind of a interesting way, which we've talked about, is weight optimization. And so people who try to exercise to lose weight sometimes get into a dilemma because the exercise makes them hungry.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. And that's genetically coded.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And it's further proof that God is male. because 80% of men find that exercise suppresses their appetite.
Mm-hmm.
So 8 out of 10 men, and there is that other 20%. But 8 out of 10 men, if they are hungry and have a difficulty keeping to their weight loss program, if they'll go out and exercise, they'll lose their appetite and get through their little crisis.
Mm.
With women, it's 50-50. 50% of women will lose their appetite with exercise. The other half of women, exercise makes them hungrier.
Yeah. And so the caloric intake will go up.
And so the caloric intake goes up. And so these are the ladies that go out and they go for a jog with their girlfriends and they finish the jog at Starbucks with a 2,000 calorie smoothie.
Oops.
Yeah.
Busted.
Yeah, yeah. It's not easy, right?
No.
No, it's not. And, you know, and so, yes, as usual, when it comes to being fit and healthy, we guys got the advantages.
Well,
and
not all.
And yet, with all the advantages that God gave us, we don't live as long as women.
Mm, yeah. Yes.
Women live an average of 5 years longer than men.
True.
Okay.
Yeah. Lifespan for men is less than that for women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to continue talking about this or another topic that you would like to discuss. Give us a call. Those phone lines are open and we have room for you in the call queue. 1-800-465-8770. We are live and this is Leading Edge Medicine.
Baby, meet me out.
we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Samira Umat, rocking here to the music, Dr. Jerry Mixon. Good. We're glad you're here on this beautiful day. It's officially summer. We are Leading Edge Medicine, and we have room for your phone calls and your questions today. Give us a call and start off your day by talking with the doctors. 1-800-465-8770.
Yeah. Well, you know, I saw a paper a year or so ago that raised a few questions in my mind. It's always the way it is when I read medical journal articles. I see an answer to something, and that answer always raises other questions. Mm. Yeah. So I saw I was reading about senescent cells. Mm-hmm. For those of you out there that don't know what senescent cells are, let me explain it a little bit. Every cell in your body is supposed to do its job for a specific period of time, and then it wears out. It's supposed to die, fall apart, get replaced by a new cell. But a small percentage of cells don't follow the plan. Mm. They get to the end of their lifespan, and then instead of dying, they become senescent, senile cells, basically. And these senile cells, they get larger. Their mitochondria start shriveling up and dying. That's the energy organelles. And instead of doing their job, they start kicking out these pro-inflammatory anti-growth, because they're at the end of their lifespan. If they try to grow and reproduce, they'll die. And they don't seem to want to die. We refer to these often as our zombie cells, the living yes. dead cells. And just as the movie zombies run around making other zombies, these zombie cells actually kick out anti-growth, anti-healing, anti-repair, pro-cancer chemicals into their environment. Mm-hmm. And they convert healthy cells into more zombie cells.
Oh.
And so one zombie cell can actually inhibit the growth and repair of over 12,000 healthy cells. Mm. And so we don't want these to occur. And as we age, we make more and more of these. And our immune system, because it is also aging, becoming less competent, our immune system is less and less effective at clearing and getting rid of these zombie cells. Mm-hmm. And so these senescent cells are a problem. We have therapy to get rid of senescent cells and reduce their numbers, but it turns out that exercise reduces senescent cells. Healthy growing cells, again, we talked about kicking out messenger RNA. Mm-hmm. Healthy growing working muscular cells will kick out chemicals into the environment that counteract the senescent cells and basically force them to go ahead and die.
How interesting is that?
So, but the senescent cells, it's kind of a combination. The more senescent cells you've got, the less functional your muscles become. Mm-hmm. Because they're getting messages right. from the senescent cells saying, don't grow, don't heal, right. don't be active.
Right, okay. right, right.
And so at some point, if your senescent load builds up high enough, you can't exercise. You become chronically fatigued and lethargic. Mm. Your heart doesn't beat as effectively. Your brain doesn't work as well because you get senescent cells in your heart, your brain, your lungs, your kidneys. Every cell in your body is susceptible to right. senescence under the proper circumstances. So I looked at the paper on exercise and senescent cells, and these guys did a nice study. They did a biopsy of the fat in these overweight people's thighs, and they measured the number of senescent cells. And then they put them on an exercise program where three times a week they did thigh exercises, lifting weights with their thighs and making those muscles work. And after 3 months, they went back and they did another little fat biopsy, and they measured the number of senescent cells in the fat overlying those working muscles. And it turned out that almost two-thirds of the senescent cells had died and gone away.
Whoa!
So the 3 months of active exercise on those thigh muscles killed the senescent cells in the overlying fat above the muscles. Well, I thought, that's interesting.
Huh.
But now, here's the question that it raised. Is that a regional phenomena? In other words, if the muscles in your thighs are working, does it just kill the senescent cells adjacent to the muscle that is in your thighs? Mm. Or does it kill senescent cells everywhere?
Everywhere.
Right. And they question was not answered in the paper.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And my guess is that it's probably to some extent both. I think it's probably regional because the working muscle is releasing its exosome stuff from those muscles.
Right.
It would make sense to me that the overlying fat tissue that was closest to those muscles would get the bulk of the load.
Yeah.
And that some would probably go systemically.
Yeah.
But my guess is most of it would happen locally.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I brought that up is I have always, well, I wouldn't say always, because when I was 50, I was a chub. I was round.
Round is a shape.
Yes.
It is a shape.
It is a shape. and it's one of these days, and when we get this on video, I will actually show the audience pictures of me in my 50s. Versus now, and you won't believe the difference. I was a couch potato, hardly looks like the same person. But now, for many years, I have had a flat belly.
Yes.
But it hasn't been truly scaphoid, and you haven't been able to see my stomach muscles, even though I wasn't heavy. I was lean. So my shoulders and my chest are bigger than my belly, but that belly just would not get totally flat. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what? I'm going to guess. I don't have the proof, but I'm going to guess that if I were doing sit-ups and making those abdominal muscles work more,
right,
that it would probably decrease the senescent load in the fat overlying my belly, and those fat cells would probably shrink more and be healthier, and you might be able to see. So I started doing sit-ups.
Mm.
Okay. I had not done a sit-up in decades. Just wasn't in my exercise routine. So I started and I did 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked up and I did 9 and 10 and 12 and 15 and 20 and 30 and 35. And I found an interesting thing. Even though my eating was the same, my total percentage of body fat has not changed appreciably. My belly is getting smaller and rigid, and you're starting to see those stomach muscles.
Right.
Now, the muscles are getting bigger because they're getting stronger because I'm working them.
Right.
But they're also appear to be killing the senescent cells.
Right. You're burning the fat.
And so that fat over my abdomen is starting to die and go away, which I thought was kind of fat. Because always before, we have told people, you don't lose fat from a particular exercise. You know, that doing squats didn't get rid of the fat on your butt and your thighs. But it may not be true. We may have been wrong all this time.
Mm.
Because it may well be that those particular working muscles may have a regional impact that is greater than the systemic impact.
Right.
And you may, in fact, be able to shrink the fat on your belly by working the muscles on your belly.
Yeah. I mean, remember we talk about sport-specific exercises. So batters will do a particular exercise to strengthen the muscles that are used in batting. Bowlers will do something completely different.
Mm, okay.
Football players will use certain muscles.
Yes.
So it's muscle memory. It's those muscles that they are needed for their specific activity that they use day in, day out that are better at performing that task than any other muscle in their body.
Yes, that's true.
That's basically what you're saying.
Yeah, but it's not just the muscle. This does appear to be impacting the
fat. On the fat tissue as well, yeah.
So. Wow. Yeah. Okay, well, I guess Suzanne Summers had something there with the Thigh Master.
Maybe.
Way back then, I may have to go dig mine out.
Under
the bed.
Yeah.
No, I don't have it anymore.
You donated it?
I probably donated it,
less fortunate than yourself who needed the Thigh Master.
The Thigh Master. Now I want it back. Oh, all right. Well, we've got a call here. Let's get this phone call on the air. And here is that number to call in and be part of the show today. We would love to talk with you. 800-465-8770. We're headed to Redmond. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, sir. How can we help?
Well, I would like to touch on a DHT, which is very seldom discussed anywhere. It's kind of the evil cousin of testosterone. And at what level, under what circumstances does DHT present a quote unquote problem?
And what is DHT, doctor?
Okay, dihydrotestosterone.
Mm.
And dihydrotestosterone is, I guess you could say testosterone on, quote, steroids, if excuse the pun, since testosterone is a steroid. So dihydrotestosterone is made from testosterone, and it is more potent than the parent compound, testosterone itself.
Okay.
So it has a bigger testosterone effect than testosterone, or better, a higher androgenic effect, more maleness associated with it. Okay. And for much of my medical career, certainly when I was in medical school, we taught that indeed dihydrotestosterone was the evil twin of testosterone, because we thought that that was what made your prostate big.
Oh.
Okay. And so we said, oh, prostatic hypertrophy, this is due to dihydrotestosterone. Because we found that if we gave people drugs that converted that inhibited the conversion of testosterone to dihydrotestosterone, prostates got smaller. And so we said, see, it was the dihydrotestosterone. But what we now know is we were wrong, as we so often are in medicine.
Practicing medicine.
That's right.
They call it that. Okay.
You got it.
Always learning.
Yeah. The only thing I've found really that we have good documentation for once we do the objective studies is it does accelerate male pattern hair loss.
Ah.
Okay. Men and women, by the way, human beings that have a genetically coded hair loss pattern, when their dihydrotestosterone level gets high, their hair loss accelerates.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And in fact, those hair follicles make their own dihydrotestosterone. So even if we kept your systemic DHT low, they would convert your dehydroepiandrosterone or pregnenolone into dihydrotestosterone. So those hair follicles make their own poison.
Wow. Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. But then again, we do have things we can put on your hair, on that portion of the scalp where you are getting male pattern baldness, and block those hair follicles from making dihydrotestosterone and help prevent you from losing that hair. So there are things we can do about it. But it doesn't seem to cause increase of prostate size. It turns out that the increase in prostate size is due to the alpha estrogen receptors. But when you have high testosterone load and you have significant body fat, you convert part of your testosterone, instead of going to dihydrotestosterone, part of it goes to estradiol, the primary female hormone. And progesterone impacts the estrogen receptors in the prostate. As we age and men's progesterone levels decline, that estrogen that is being made out of testosterone alters the way the estrogen receptors in the prostate function, and they start immortalizing the epithelial cells in the prostate.
Okay.
And so prostate cells are dying slower because they're becoming immortalized. They're still being produced at the standard rate, but they're dying slower, and so the prostate gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay. So we now know that it's not really the dihydrotestosterone that's causing the prostate enlargement. It is, in fact, the drop of progesterone and the conversion of testosterone to estradiol that is making the prostate get bigger.
Okay.
Okay. Now, so then if you add progesterone to like you do on your face.
Yes.
And you pump it up to a certain level, does that have any systemic?
Yes.
Oh.
And we'll talk about it when we get back. You hear the music? Yeah. We got to take a break. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Sit tight. We'll
be right back.
Stay right
there. We'll be back. Yeah. And we'll be back with your questions too. 1-800-465-8770. Get in on the conversation. Leading Edge Medicine will return. Good. and we're glad to be here with you on Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. We would love to talk with you, and here is that number to get through with your questions, 1-800-465-8770, talking about that testosterone and the DHT.
And the pregnenolone.
Yeah, and all of those
progesterone and the estradiol. Yeah.
I mean, the hormones are the same in both men and women. It's just that the amounts are very different.
Yeah, the ratios and the amounts are different. That's right. But we men and women make the same hormones. We just alter the amounts of this versus that. Okay, here's the issue then. Yes, if we raise your progesterone level high enough, early enough in the enlargement process, because you got to remember your progesterone level started declining in your 30s and your 40s. Okay, you didn't notice your prostate getting big usually till your 60s, and so that process was going. That prostate started enlarging. The progesterone level got lower and lower and lower. And in most men, by their late 50s, you can't hardly find any progesterone. I mean, it's just dwindled away to nothing almost. And so if we can raise that progesterone early enough, before the prostate gets too big, we can prevent it from getting big. That is the theory. That's what we've been working on. We didn't really have the goal of lowering or making the prostate smaller. But it does appear that in some of our older male patients that have been using the progesterone long enough, they're actually starting to urinate better and better over time. Mm. So I think that if we can disinhibit that and we can suppress that estrogen effect, the alpha estrogen receptors on the prostate, and keep it up long enough, we can probably start shrinking the prostate eventually. The problem is that most men don't start having a prostate problem until their urine is already constricted. They don't have years. You know, you got to do something about it right now. And then the question is, how much progesterone should you have? Now, Dr. Umat and I have very different ideas about that. She gets nervous if the progesterone level gets up at around 2 nanograms. Mm-hmm. I don't. I carry mine at least 2 and 3. And the reason that she's nervous and the reason I'm not so nervous is my personal impact has been different than her theory. Mm-hmm. But her theory may well apply to most men. Mm-hmm. I don't pretend to be normal. I always find normal to be grossly overrated. But the reality is we used to use high-dose medroxyprogesterone acetate to kill the sex drive of people we considered sexual deviants. Mm. See, back in the bad old days, 1930s, 40s, 50s, our politicians told us that homosexuality was a crime, that we had to stop this from happening. And so because it was illegal to have sex with the same gender, they looked for ways to stop it. And it turned out that if you boost the progesterone levels high enough, you will totally kill the sex drive.
Mm. Okay. Is that also known as chemical castration? Is that what they do?
Chemical castration. That is
okay. That's what they're doing.
Well, that was one of the ways they did it, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. And Dr. Turing, who actually invented the computers that solved the Germans' code and allowed us to win the Second World War, was homosexual. And because he was convicted of homosexuality after the Second World War, he was given high doses of progesterone to quote, cure him of his homosexuality. It totally killed his sex drive, triggered severe depression, and he committed suicide.
Yeah.
All right. So that was his reward for helping us win the Second World War. But the question is, where is that level?
Okay.
And I know Dr. Umat likes to keep men at 2 or below. I go higher, and my philosophy is, if your libido is still robust and you're having a great sex life, Why do you want it lower? I'd like my prostate to grow as slowly as possible. In fact, if I can shrink it, I'll be happier.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's another factor here, though, Jerry. It's the level of visceral fat and estrogen in men. And so where your visceral fat level is really low and your estradiol level doesn't matter because your estradiol is now beneficial, in men that carry a higher visceral fat level than ideal, their estradiol is now pro-inflammatory for them.
True.
And so that relationship between estrogen and progesterone varies in each individual.
Yes.
And so higher progesterone levels in relation to estrogen and testosterone then do impact not only on their libido, but make them constipated, make them hungrier and sad. And so there are side effects that go along with that. And so you gauge that with each person as you're having a conversation. They don't know what you're thinking, but you're asking them these questions mm-hmm. so you can decide whether this is right for them or not. Do the side effects overcome the benefits of giving them the medication at that time or not?
I used to push my progesterone because I didn't know where that level was. And for me, personally, when my progesterone gets up close to 7, mm-hmm. I get moody. Mm-hmm. I get the munchies. I want to eat more. Mm-hmm. I get tired. Mm-hmm. And I get weepy over chick flicks. You know, and so... So 6-7 is kind of the danger zone for me.
Yeah.
If I stay below that, I do fine.
Right.
But some men, when they get over 2, they'll start getting those symptoms much earlier than I. And you're right. I think that my increased muscle mass and low body fat are helping protect me against the downsides of the progesterone.
Exactly. Yeah.
So does that answer your question?
1.1 on the progesterone, and my DHT is like 406 or something like that.
Yeah, you're converting a lot of your testosterone to dehydrotestosterone. But what you're doing then is you're getting a super androgenic effect. You're getting more impact on your muscle mass, your energy, your ability to heal and grow new lean tissue. So I don't worry so much about that as long as you're not developing prostatic hypertrophy. But even then, I think that that's mostly a decline in your progesterone, not a rise in your DHT that's causing the problem.
And if you are using transdermal testosterone, then you will carry a high DHT.
Yeah, and especially where you put the testosterone. It turns out that the 5-alpha reductase receptors in your skin are highest in the genitalia. So the penis and scrotum has very, very high levels. So if you're putting testosterone cream there, you're going to convert a lot of it to DHT. And then the number of receptors in that skin decreases as you move down your thighs. So the further down your thighs towards your knees you get, the less 5-alpha reductase conversion you're going to get. And so I put mine on my genitals because I don't worry about the DHT, and I put it in my axilla, in my armpits a lot. And then whatever residuals left on my hands, I rub over on my shoulder muscles and stuff because I want those muscles to get big and strong. So I don't worry about it, but for guys that don't want to make that conversion, I say move your testosterone application as far away from the genitals as you can and still get adequate blood levels. So you might then want to use the inner arms, the armpits, behind your knees, down your calves, and so on to get further away.
When you put the progesterone cream on your face relative to your hair, to your scalp, it mm-hmm. seems to me like some of the... anti-DHT, whether you ever call it 5-alpha reductase, you're putting it on your skin, on your face.
Yes.
And I guess my question is, could it potentially, does that affect the follicles or the follicles in your hair so that it might kill off some of that DHT that is self-generated in your
it
scalp?
It might, although I tend to use a minoxidil foam on my hair. On my scalp. Uh-huh. I wish I'd started it 30 or 40 years earlier because my hair started thinning out when I was 30. But I've decided not to lose any more than I have to. So I put the minoxidil foam. And,
well,
but also
but
progesterone
really
helps.
For DHT, minoxidil.
No.
No, no. Minoxidil does not.
That's right.
But also, since we've started talking about scalp application for hair, preventing hair loss,
sure.
We are working on a new program in our clinic, and
yes,
we've actually just ordered in some scalp care products. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested, you can come into Bella Medica and speak to the girls about what they have.
And they actually have a very potent 5-alpha reductase inhibitor
just
in
for scalp,
it,
yeah.
That you only put on your scalp, on your hair, and it blocks the ability of those hair follicles to make and react to the DHT.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Take care, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. We are almost to 9 o'clock. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back. And we invite you to call in. You got a question about your health, maybe some new symptoms, or perhaps you have a procedure coming up you don't quite understand, or any of those things with aging. Let us know. We would like to talk about that and discuss it and see what we can do for you. Here's the number to get through today for Leading Edge Medicine. We are live in the studio, 1-800-465-8770. Taking a quick break, and we'll be back. Stay right there.